Thank you for listening to the serialized podcast version of The Mark of a Druid, a fiction fantasy novel written and read by Rhonda R. Carpenter. I suggest that you start the story at the beginning, and to be sure that you get all of the episodes, go to themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. Episode 18, Chapter 27, Another Phase of Training. Sandy Chapman Cooper opened the office of Ryerson Partners late on Tuesday morning, after the scrap Craig and Ryerson had had the day before. She wasn't looking forward to the day. In her 3 years of working for the two men, she'd never seen them fight. Disagree, yes, but never raise voices at one another. She wondered if the pending merger would leave her looking for a position elsewhere. Sandy set the teapot to boil in the small kitchenette in the back of the office. She waited impatiently, tapping her fingers on the counter. She decided she'd let them work it out. All she needed to do was keep her bloody mouth shut for the next few days, and she'd be alone in the office for 3 weeks. She reassured herself she had it all under control. Craig Bellamy slid from the seat of his bike. The ride had been good in the brisk morning air, and Craig had managed to get some of his frustration out in the process. Now he wondered what he was going to say to Ryerson about yesterday, or if he should even try. Maybe it would be best to just let it blow over. Lifting the bike to his shoulder, he entered the brownstone. Ryerson parked his car at the curb, seconds later, and sat behind the wheel, unmoving. He knew he really needed to apologize to Craig for his behavior. These stupid dreams were truly interfering with his normal life. Not today, he thought, and exited the car with determination. He pushed through the door. Sandy and Craig abruptly stopped their conversation. Am I interrupting? Ryerson asked. Your ears must have been burning, love, chimed Sandy. We were just talking about the trip, Craig put in. The tickets arrived yesterday afternoon. Let me get them. Sandy scurried to her desk and produced two envelopes. You both need to be watching your backsides while you're gone. Stick together. It's what you're best at. Ryerson and Craig nodded an agreement and took the extended envelopes from her hands. I've got work to be getting to, so if you don't mind, I'll be at it. Sandy gave them a wink, then turned and made for the safety of her workspace. Craig, listen, I need to talk to you. How about the conference room? Ryerson almost fell over his words, a guilt-ridden expression on his face. Sure. But if it's about yesterday, then forget it. We're under a lot of strain. No hard feelings, chum. When the door was closed and they had some privacy, Ryerson went blank. How was he going to explain any of his behavior? He hadn't a clue. Maybe Craig was right. Just let it go. But something in him was not happy about leaving things unfinished, especially on a bad note. He owed Craig more than that. Listen, Craig, I was a real arse yesterday. There's no excuse for my behavior. I am truly sorry. Yeah, well, no real harm done then, Craig said. I suppose not. But even Ryerson wasn't sure that the damage to their friendship could be so easily repaired. Rye, I was planning a quiet day. We have almost everything ready. You look like you haven't slept a wink. We have packing to do. Why not clean up some loose ends and call it an early day? Bug out of here before tea time. It'll give Sandy some time off before we leave. You know, she's running the ship while we're gone. What do you say, old man? Craig cuffed him on the shoulder. Sounds good. I could do with a good night's sleep. The vivid dream from that morning flashed in Ryerson's mind, and he blushed. He knew all too well he needed to catch up on his rest. Righto then, let's give it a go, he said. The workload was light. Just before lunch, they'd reached the intended goals and broke the news to Sandy. She was thrilled to be offered time off and agreed to forward the telephones to her company cell. By mid-afternoon, Ryerson was back home. Suitcases were out, and he was packed quickly enough. He zipped the luggage, placed it in the alcove by the door, and then laid down on the sofa, closing his eyes. As the feast carried on for the second night, the trees overhead bent to the wind's unyielding demands. Leanne and Adam joined the celebration a day late. Everyone in the great hall was befuddled with mead and strong wine. Adam's father stood, swaying as he entered the hall with Leanne on his arm. Although Adam's training was far from over, he felt he had a new perspective and was looking to the future through adult eyes. He was truly a man in every sense of the word. Staggering toward his son with a wide, white-toothed smile on his face, Leff's eyes traveled over Leanne. Light gray-colored eyes surveyed her from foot to white blonde hair with a knowing look that undressed her with familiarity. Adam could see his father already knew what was beneath her clothes. The pit of his stomach tightened, and he wondered how intimate his father had been with Leanne. Leff clapped Adam on the back. He announced to the crowd, "My son is a man. I will drink with him to celebrate his passage." The roar echoed in the great hall. Cups pounded on the tables. Mead sloshed into laps. Good wishes filled the room, and despite Adam's best efforts, he could feel the flush of red creep up his neck and heat his cheeks. The latest onslaught of food was being laid on the tables. Adam reached for the roast pig. He had seen many feasts before, but never one which filled the great hall to overflowing. Stepping over discarded bones and spilled beverages, he made his way to the right side of his father's chair, sitting himself with Leanne in his lap. Adam gobbled the meat in his hand. The drape of her arm around his neck roused what he thought couldn't be lifted from its limp position between his legs. Leanne smiled and whispered in his ear, "Ready so soon? You have not yet enjoyed the celebration." She wiggled her bottom in his lap and smiled mischievously, her expression teasing. Leff stood and raised his horned cup. "A toast! Adam of the Ambrise is now a man. Soon he'll be a leader of men." The hall filled with the billowing voices of drunken warriors and high seas travelers. The cheers mingled again with the pounding of tables and the stomping of feet. The noise filled the hall, threatening to lift the roof from its timbers. Adam wandered around in his own thoughts of leadership. Where was he to lead? And who was going to follow? He was not his father, the seldom present explorer. And Adam was not a prince or even a warrior. He summed himself up as a half-trained druid shapeshifter, just turned man 2 days before. He sat and watched the merriment which surrounded him, holding Leanne in his lap and drinking honeyed mead faster than the cup could be refilled. Arthfiel whispered his congratulations for a job well done and asked of Adam's hands, which were still wrapped partially with the spiderweb bandages. Adam offered his hands for inspection as Leanne stood, stepping around the table and beginning to dance. Carmag plucked at the strings of his harp in rapid succession, as others beat out a continuous tempo on drums and tables. Adam watched her with keen eyes, memorizing every movement of her body, the lift of a foot, and the gyration of her round hips. The embrace of her touch still burned his skin. Arthfiel coated the backs of his hands once more and wrapped them with soft cloth this time. A fine, strong woman. "And yet she moves with the grace of a drifting feather," Arthfiel said, one eyebrow cocked. All eyes were on her, including Batar's. Adam watched his ex-friend seethe behind an all-too-obvious fake smile. He kept an eye on him, wondering what had become of their friendship. Batar stalked from the hall with a pronounced limp. Adam let his attention once more focus on the feast. Carmag picked up his harp and walked toward his partner, with his shoulders thrown back and his barrel chest preceding him with pride. The smile on his face revealed a flash of white teeth, and he sauntered through the crowd to sit beside Adam. They pounded each other on the backs, toasting to manhood. Adam introduced Leanne. Carmag saluted her with a lift of his glass and drank deeply. The bard, Talon, stood at the head of the main table and recited tales of war and triumph, adventure and magic. The tall, thin, balding man with chestnut-colored eyes, blazing with excitement, flailed his arms as he told the tale of Adam's father's latest adventure. The newly ordained men sat on the edge of the bench, taking in every word that Talon spoke of the land of the vine. "A place I hope to see in my travels," Adam said to Carmag. Talon spoke of never-ending glacier-lined coasts, so blue that the sky paled in comparison. The summers with meadows of lush green grasses and fat cows. Forests so thick with trees that a man could not stand up straight or make his way through the denseness without chopping a path. The bard gloried over the blue of the sky, which he said was the reflection of the ocean which lined the coastal lands. Descriptions of wild sheep and ram in the high country, and boars as big as cows that were strong enough to take a man to his knees with one touch of a yellow tusk, did not disappoint the listeners. Talon held his hands like claws, sweeping at the air when he spoke of the giant white bears of immense strength and cunning. Adam's mind flooded with possibilities. "What a land this must be," he mused. The night's celebration continued with song and verse, dancing and music, laughter and congratulations. At sunrise, Leanne and Adam coupled under an oak tree. Adam did not see Batar until later that morning when he stumbled over the brat-covered form, sleeping on a dew-drenched ground near the fort entrance. A jug of mead Batar had been drinking stood upright next to him. At least he didn't spill it. "He must have succumbed to the drink here," Adam stated. Carmag simply nodded his agreement. Adam reached for Batar's shoulders to try to wake him. After several minutes of shaking, Adam decided it would be easier just to carry him to his lodge. Carmag lifted slack shoulders as Adam lifted muddied feet. Careful not to grip the wounds at Batar's ankles, his limp body, stinking of his own vomit, hung between them like a roan deer after a fatal arrow blow to the heart. Carmag pushed the door to Batar's lodge open with his back, and they placed him inside, leaving at once. Adam and Carmag strutted their newly acquired status across the compound. Adam's hands were healing nicely, and the bandages had been removed, exposing the fresh tattoos to the air. He could see the soft, thin scabs, which covered intricately detailed circles, and the images that marked the back of his hands. Thoughts of leadership flashed in his mind as the two approached the group of men from Leff's fleet, who were standing at the river's dock. The river wound out of sight, and Adam shielded his eyes from the glare sparkling off the water. In the distance, a form began to take shape. A small bow of a boat was plainly in view. It approached the dock in the time it took Carmag to speculate as to who was aboard. Leff and Arthfiel were in conference, while Leff's men cleaned and prepared the ship for the coming winter season. Adam was surprised to see a young man dressed in meager clothing inside the boat. A druid bard accompanied him. "I think that's Baclan," Adam commented to Carmag, who was standing next to him, shading his eyes so he too could see.
"Aye, that's him," he grumbled. "Last summer my da said he was the laziest man ever created, and that he was sticking his nose in where it did not belong."
They laughed and waited to take the rope, which was being handed up to the dock from the small boat. Baclan held his seat, saying to the boy,
"Gilno, bring your pack and follow me."
He watched the boy step awkwardly from the boat to the dock and then rose, stepping out. Nodding to Adam, the round bard smiled at Carmag.
"How is your father, Carmag?"
Carmag rolled his eyes as Adam then turned to Baclan and answered with a broad smile.
"He is well. I'll let him know of your return."
Baclan looked at Gilno.
Carmag of the Sword and Adam of the Amber Eyes, this is Gilno. He is not yet a man, and still he shows mighty courage. He comes to study with the warriors for this cycle. Gilno's cheeks colored. Adam clasped forearms with the newcomer in a greeting of welcome. The clan studied the backs of his hands and lifted a brow.
You have the markings of a leader. I see you've reached manhood with success. Good, good for you, my friend.
Adam simply nodded, not wanting the conversation to turn to the leadership he had not yet defined. Gilno gave a tentative smile, and then he and B'Clan walked away toward the fort. Carmag laughed when they were out of hearing distance.
My father will be so happy to have a new apprentice. Poor Gilno. I hope he's in running shape. 'Tis not easy to pass my father's tests of stamina and endurance.
He talked of the training which he had endured at the hands of his father as they walked to the fort. Passing through the tall wooden gates of the palisade that surrounded the fort, Arthfiel hailed Adam, gesturing for him to come. Adam excused himself, making his way to Arthfiel.
Adam, I have spoken with your father. In the next phase of your training, you will learn the ways of battle. There is a new boy who will be training with you. He comes from a village southeast of here.
Is that not the village where the girl I followed lives?
I meant to ask you why I did not know her village.
Yes, it is her village. There are many druid camps in this land. You cannot be expected to know them all.
You are still young, he chuckled.
Tell me about the village, Adam asked.
'Tis mainly a place for healers and seers, Arthfiel stated flatly. This spring there will be a gathering of all the clans for the celebration of Imbolc. You will meet many high druids. There will be representatives from each clan present. There are matters that must be discussed in council that are of importance to us all. Runners have been sent with the news of your father's return, as well as the gathering to come.
He rose and shut the door. Winter closes its grasp on us, even as we speak.
Your father will be wintering in our lodge. One ship will stay here while the rest move to their families.
Adam listened with the ears of someone well beyond his years. He heard the nuances in Arthfiel's words. Things were changing with his people. There were fewer recruits to the order. In years past, it was an honor and desire for fathers to send their sons to be trained, and for mothers to relinquish their daughters into the schooling hands of the wise.
Adam looked about and wondered how many druids were left.
He shrugged his shoulders and put it out of his mind. Training began the next morning. Carmag's father, with his prized son at his side, collected Gilno and Adam from their morning meal and took them into the cold gray of morning. McGart was a stout man with rippling biceps and forearms the size of 2-year-old oak trees. McGart of the Swift Arm, to his men, he was the best of Lef's warriors. He towered head and shoulders above the tallest man in Dale. His legend preceded him, and the bards sang of his victories over the armies of various enemies. He was a hard man and, like his son, spoke very little, reserving his opinion for those with the power to make decisions. He had at one time served under Lef as his right hand, but after marrying Carmag's mother, McGart had settled here to teach his skills. With his gray hair and leather brat trimmed in otter skin blowing in the frigid wind, he barked at his students to run until they vomited their breakfasts onto the frozen ground. Carmag laughed aloud and was immediately clouted on the back of the head by his father.
"Do you not remember the weakness leaving you, Carmag?" he chastised. "Take these 2 old ladies to the stables and have them build their arms hefting the iron of a good blade," McGart said, roaring with laughter.
The stables were musty and dim. The smell of manure clung to the very air. The horses were wide-eyed as the blades swung. Gilno and Adam fumbled through the drills. Each failed connection destroyed balance.
"This takes arms I do not possess, Carmag," Adam commented as the blade of his sword stuck in the dirt, causing a quiver to run up his arm.
Carmag smiled, flashing his teeth and clapping his friend on the back harder than necessary. Aye, my friend, but they will grow and so will your prowess. Try standing with your legs further apart when you swing. The sound of blade against blade rang in Adam's ear. The distant beeping of the alarm clock jolted Ryerson to a sitting position on the sofa. Sweat covered his body. The smell of the stable still seared his nostrils. He walked to his bedroom and turned off the alarm, then walked to the small office in his flat, mumbling to himself, Vineland, Leff, glacier-lined coast. He sat at his desk. This was the first dream that had given him anything to go on. Resting his fingertips on the keyboard, he typed Vineland into the small search box engine at the top of the screen and pressed Enter. The Mark of a Druid is now available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and BooksAMillion.com, among other places on the web. If you know someone that likes to hold a book, and you're the one that likes to listen, pass the news on. I really appreciate all the listeners, and I appreciate your comments as well. Leave them at iTunes, and leave them at Podio Books or TheMarkOfADruid.com. Until next time, take care.